Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
You know, you are the rarest of congressional people, Sean Patrick Maloney, in that you come from a really competitive district, and you won. You won again. To what do you attribute your success?
Well, listen, first of all, let me say thank you to the people I represent, to the voters of the Hudson Valley, and let me also say to the people who did not support me, I want to make it really clear up front that I still work for you. I work for everybody. Everyone is welcome in my office, and we're going to remember who pays the bills. And I think the reason we won is because we did that, and we reached across the aisle. We worked in a bipartisan fashion. I've said before on your show, we passed 13 bipartisan bills in my first term, helping our vets, helping our farmers, investing in our infrastructure, and lots of other good things. And I think we were rewarded for being someone who reaches across the aisle, puts the political games aside, and gets results. And I will say, Alan, I'm glad that I represent a competitive district. I'll tell you, I was pretty tired on November 4th, but I think you should have to earn jobs like this. We have too many comfortable members of Congress. Everybody ought to earn it every day, and that's certainly the seat I represent. And that makes for a better Congress, if you ask me. If we had more people who were worried about losing their jobs.
So, Sean Patrick Maloney, let me ask you a question. Was there some point during the election when your opponent, Nan Hayworth, made a move which you said, "Ha, got her now"?
Well, look, I think that we have been talking to the voters of the Lower Hudson Valley for about 3 years now. They know us pretty well, and I think they know what the choice was. So I think there were less aha moments than a simple choice between my style of doing this work and the vision she represented. Look, the election is over. I don't want to get into criticisms of my opponent. I will say people need to know, it's not easy to do what Nan Hayworth did, to put your name on a ballot, to put yourself out there. I respect her. I respect how hard she worked. And I know there's a lot of very good people who worked hard for her and who believed in her. And I want them to know that I work for them. And now is not the time to play politics or to spike the football. It's to heal the wounds, bring everybody together, and get things done. There's work to do.
Well, despite your warning and your very lovely decision not to fight with her after the fact, I think that's very wise, I want to ask you something. I noticed a tremendous difference between her rhetoric the first time she ran against you, which was decidedly more to the right of things, and this time. Am I wrong?
Well, look, when the voters go in a different direction, I think any common sense person is going to say, maybe I should learn something. So maybe she felt that made more sense. I don't know. You should probably ask her. Look, I think that we have, as you know, pretty stark differences between us. It doesn't mean either of us, is the holder of truth. It means, We have different views of how things ought to get done. A lot of the same goals, of course, and I think we have too much, personal invective and bitterness in our politics. I want to work with people who hold views that Nan Hayworth has, and I do. I'm working with Chris Gibson right now to fight Lyme disease. I'm working to make our trains safer. I'm working to help our veterans with a bunch of conservative Republicans. We can disagree on stuff and still get stuff done. And so I think that I'm going to leave the campaign behind and get to work.
Okay, so what did you learn the first term, last term?
Oh, listen, I learned that you don't get anything done without cooperation. I think what I'm very proud of is that as a freshman in the minority party, I passed 13 bipartisan bills. We got three of them signed into law. That means our farmers are getting better crop insurance. That means we are investing in our dams and our other infrastructure in the Hudson Valley. It means we're going to lower disability claim wait times for our veterans, and it means that I, in the same vein, with the same strategy, am going to stop this rate hike, hopefully, on these energy prices. Chris Gibson and I, as you know, have passed a bill to stop that through the House. We're working right now to make our trains safer. There's so much stuff we can do, and what I learned in the first term is that that's the right strategy, and I think the voters rewarded me for that. Listen, we got enough people down here in Washington yelling at each other on Fox and MSNBC. I don't want to be riding around in this, partisan clown car that you see down here that I think is just about people making noise and not getting anything done. And so what I learned is we're on the right track. we're getting results, and I want to keep working.
Okay, so let me ask you about an issue. There's I probably get more emails about the Keystone Pipeline than anything else. You voted for it. How come?
Look, we have billions of gallons of Bakken crude oil right now moving down the Hudson Valley. So this is about a pipeline, for people who don't know, out in the middle part of the country. But we have a de facto pipeline that nobody ever put to a vote, nobody ever agreed to. We have a pipeline moving along the railroad right down the Hudson River every single day and on the river, carrying soon to be 5 billion gallons of Bakken crude oil right now through the Hudson Valley. That is a catastrophic risk on the river for a spill, and it's a very real and present danger for the communities along those rail lines where a derailment or an explosion could create a real catastrophe. We have seen these accidents elsewhere. It's one of the reasons I'm working on train safety, banging on the federal regulators, getting the right cars on the rail, and training our first responders and everything else. But here's the point. That was always supposed to be temporary until we had proper pipeline infrastructure in other parts of the country, like Keystone. So for us locally, Keystone is not just some abstraction. It is about, are we going to continue to be essentially a railroad and a shipping operation taking the place of a pipeline? And I just have real concerns about that.
I mean, the thing that concerns me about this, Sean, is the idea that we are shipping oil from Canada to Louisiana that Americans won't use, that this is for foreign consumption.
Well, it may or may not be. There is optionality there around energy independence. As you point out, it's not an American resource; it's a Canadian resource, and it's going to get pumped out of the ground, and it's going to go where it's going to go, whether we like it or not. The question is whether we create American jobs, building infrastructure, energy infrastructure in the United States, and we put a lot of people to work in the refineries that have that capacity, and we stop using the Hudson River as a de facto pipeline with oil in train cars that aren't safe, with barges that could spill. That's the question. So I just have a pragmatic position on this. And listen, we can be serious about reductions in our carbon emissions, because the most important thing we got to do is stop the carbon emissions from our coal fire plants that are really the primary driver of this. And if you look at the agreement we just reached with the Chinese, if you look at what they're talking about with the Canadians, the real thing is, as a group of nations that are the primary producers of carbon, we need to have a long-term reduction strategy, but we can't spike energy prices in the meantime, because we got to get the economy going. We got to bring manufacturing.
Yeah. But let me interrupt, because we're almost out of time. But if that's the case, the Congressional Budget Office and everybody else are saying, you know, maybe a couple of thousand jobs building the thing, but then only 50 jobs running it. How does that benefit us?
Well, I don't know how many jobs it takes to run the Tappan Zee Bridge, but it's a critical piece of infrastructure, and it creates a massive amount of economic activity. And I'll take the tens of thousands of jobs for our building trades at good wages with good benefits to build infrastructure. I wouldn't look down my nose at that. We are in an economy where we are desperate to create good high wage jobs with good benefits, and energy infrastructure is a real opportunity. I was with President Clinton last night. He said there's probably 1 million or 2 million jobs we could create over the next 10 years in energy infrastructure in this country of all types. And we need to get going on this stuff. We need to grow this economy. And so that's where I am on it.
Well, again, congratulations, Sean Patrick Maloney. Glad you're back with us and talking to us as always. And when we come back the next time, I'm going to ask you about Nancy Pelosi.
Okay. Thank you.